I think we're ready to get started here. Say a quick few words here about 3M and George Buckley, Chairman, President, and CEO, who we have here today. George is going to roam around a little bit, so he's mobile. George is coming to 3M and brought some new blood and some new thoughts to 3M and is spending to try to accelerate the growth of the company. And George is here to, tell us all about that today, so I'll let him do that. I just, also like to say that, under prior management, we didn't get to see the CEO as much as we, might like, and so we appreciate George being very accessible and coming down here to, despite the weather, to give us some enlightenment. So thanks a lot, George.
Okay, well, you saw the flash Miranda warning, and thank you, by the way, Sharon, for the introduction. By the way, we came from Minnesota, and when I drove to work this morning, the temperature was -2. When I drove to work yesterday morning, the temperature was -18. The guy that came to repair my furnace told me it was -21 at his house, so it's not any kind of a challenge, frankly speaking, to come here today to Miami. this is wonderful. Okay, here's the Miranda warning. I think you've all read it. And let's get started. As Shannon said, I came to the company about a year ago, maybe a year and a quarter ago now. Seems sometimes like it's about 10 years. But obviously the mission that the board gave me was to try to find a way to drive higher growth. That was fundamentally what we were doing. And what I'm going to talk about today is obviously something about our historical performance. Just a little bit of a quick look back, and talk about our strategy for growth, and also want to reassure people we are very committed to operational excellence. It's very much part of who we are. 3M is a great manufacturing company, a great innovative company, but it's also a great manufacturing company. And then we'll summarize it all together. Take a look at the historical performance, and you can see here in the top left-hand corner, local currency growth going back from 2001 to 2006, 5.3% CAGR, roughly peaking last year at around 8%. In the operating margin case over here on the right-hand side, 2006, 2005, very similar levels. The slight dip you see there is a stock option issue, not anything material. So operating margins up above 22%, forgive me. And just a premium operating environment in our company. Bottom left-hand corner, 17% growth in EPS. And on the right-hand side here, returns north of 20%, so premium returns. So all the kind of quality that you expect in a company of the kind of 3M. Productivity, again, it's something that we're asked about often by investors. Are you guys still pushing Six Sigma? The answer is yes. And you can see over here the kind of numeric numbers, colossal amount of people trained, 55,000 people. So got a great tradition of operating excellence in our company. And going down to the bottom here, probably the place where we've got to now go with this kind of capability is into the supply chain. Because the supply chain is a sort of historical anomaly, shall we say, of 3M. It's has too many shunts, I should say, from product from plant to plant. So that's one of the issues that we will be working on. On sales productivity, nice rise in productivity from 2001 to 2006. Still more to be had in that area. And up on the top chart here, overhead cost leverage, we expect to see this going down, maybe potentially another point of margin over the coming few years. So lots of headroom yet in this company. Let's talk a little bit about how 3M goes to market and the relationship that 3M has with its customers. This is essentially what the customer, the company is. It's innovative and practical solutions from a diversified technology company. That's kind of who we think about ourselves. And here's how we look at where we are. You know, 3M is always renowned for its great brand strength, for its great products, for its innovation. And here's how we see ourselves positioned. Take a look at this chart, sort of price versus perceived value. This is where we see the competitors. And obviously this sort of 45-degree line would be a line where the price and the value are equivalent. We see our competitors probably slightly overpriced relative to the value they offer to customers. We, though, position our secondary brands typically about the same kind of price or maybe marginally above that of the competitors, but we try to make sure that we always deliver enhanced value above that of our competition. Our premium brands, so this would be Scotch, Post-it, Vicuity, and brands like that, are brands that we position further up the marketplace and usually below the price-value curve, and so we think that this gives us some kind of competitive advantage and is something that offers us a lot of flexibility going forward. So this is how we do it. Really three main building blocks in enhancing customer value. The first is through innovation that provides performance-differentiated products to our customers. And we try to use our products to make our customers more efficient in their delivery of value to their customers. So, for example, when we go into an automotive shop, our model there is how can we take time out of the repair through the kind of products that we make. That's the kind of way we think about these sorts of things. Obviously, we're in the business of helping our customers build their returns. So typically, if you take a look at the products that we sell, you'll find that our customers make higher margins on the products, in particular our branded products, than they do on the competition. So the strength of our brands is key here. Something that's fairly common for us is we'll send our Six Sigma resources, the kind of army that we have that I talked about earlier, we send them into our customers and work on solving their problems, of course, work on solving their problems with our products. So this is another great skill that we have, building our customers' business returns to our capability. And then again, going back to the brand issue, you know, when you walk into, say, for example, a Staples or Office Depot, you know, you know, we were talking about this earlier for some investors. How are you going to say, I want office tape? Do I want cellophane tape? I mean, you come in and you say Scotch tape. So the recognition of these global brands, these very powerful brands, these icons are very, very powerful in bringing value not just to us, but to our customers. And here's how we go about touching our customers. Just, I don't want to necessarily go around every particular arm of this diagram, but thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of customer contacts that we use through various mechanisms, service employees, technical employees, lab visits, our sales folks, Six Sigma projects, and so on and so forth. So lots of customer contacts using this kind of model that I talked about earlier to bring value to our customers. And here's the real sort of the heart and soul of them. Here's the classic way we think about things. If we take just these nine technology platforms, and by the way, we have about 39 or 40 of these technology platforms, what we typically will do is we'll take a look at these technology platforms, look at the markets over here, and we find out how do we go about delivering a decent value to, say, all of these markets. And then we think about it with abrasives. And by the way, you can see a couple of places where abrasives are missing off here. And we just go down this and do it again and again and again. And actually, if I drew this diagram, it would be not understandable because I would have this kind of matrix, this mesh down 39 different technology platforms at 3M. And this is what makes 3M so robust. The fact that we may see some weakness in one of these markets, but there may be strength in another one, and this sort of lattice, this technology and market lattice, is what is unique in 3M. And as an outsider that came to the company a little over a year ago, and as a professional engineer in my youth, one of the things that is so remarkable about 3M is the way in which it shares these technology platforms across the company. It is absolutely amazing to behold when you see what 3M does with its technologies and how it replicates them across different markets. Here's a few examples of how we bring value to the customer. We've got at the top our orthodontics business. These are self aligning braces that actually reduce the chair time. So again, we're bringing value to the dentist. In this particular thing, this is a cross section of one of the overhead wires that you'll see strung from these transmission towers, or pylons, as they're sometimes called. And this is a product that we make now. Our real added value is in this core. It's a ceramic core, and it allows the cable to transmit about 2.5 times the power down this cable as a conventional cable does. So in those cases where rights of way are very difficult to get, this is a great product for people to put in their utilities. Something else, part of our film business, something else that 3M is well known for, this is a road signs. We make lots of road signs, or at least the films that make road signs. And essentially they are imprinted with little lenses that reflect the light, so essentially you can see our signs. In other cases, you cannot. And some floating image security applications. Here's something that we're well known for, kind of almost the masters of the universe, maybe in the optical film business. Great value added. What we're able to do typically is to cut the power consumption of a television by more or less 40% by using the kind of films that we have. Here's a just simple common or garden product, painter's blue tape. I know actually from my own experience before I came to 3M using one of the off-brand products that when I put it on some wood, it pulled off the varnish. This is absolutely fabulous stuff, and again brings great brand, great capability and great margin to our customers. And right at the other end of the spectrum here, we have a noise reduction stethoscope. Probably something that you wouldn't really know that 3M made, but we own the premier brand of stethoscopes in our medical business, and able to allow a doctor to differentiate a sick person from a well person. Here's one of the great things of 3M. This is our international distribution network, and we have probably what is the best international distribution network of any company, not just of our size, but probably two or three times our size in the world. And so if we're able to generate growth through great products, not always, but typically back here in the United States, this can go out through the network. And you can see the green on this slide are those countries where we have labs locally developing products for those people in that marketplace to their particular needs. An example of a customer interface here, this is LG Philips, they make televisions, and we've had a long-term partnership with them, and we have a kind of a philosophy, a policy of win with the winners. So if the winners go to Poland or winners go to somewhere else, we will make sure that we're supporting them there in that marketplace. So this is an example of when LG went to invested in a new plant in Poland. We were alongside with them, doing what we need to do to support them in the film business. And this is just one example. I mean, we have many of these, but what we typically do with these electronic manufacturers is we will have a lot of bench-to-bench contacts with the company, trying to work on advanced technology, trying to work on the next generation of products, trying to come up with new ideas, breakthrough ideas for these customers. And the other thing that we try to work on is obviously we have many customers that perhaps are headquartered in one location, they buy from another location, they sell in another location, they source in another location. And so we have systems in our company where we manage these transnational accounts to make sure that it's seamless for the customer, whether that customer be Samsung, whether it be LG Philips, whether it be Motorola, or whatever it would be. Okay, so And that's all very nice, but how do we intend to grow? The you know, the background of 3M, you all know, is we're a technological company. We're a company that's known for its innovation. And the heart and soul of our company, the kind of the nuclear power plant, the nuclear idea power plant, is in our technology. And so it all begins really with product innovation. I just want to make one key point here. 3M's also known for its process capability. But the thing that you've got to be careful when you're in the invention phase is invention, by its very nature, is a disorderly process. And if you try to reduce invention to a process, then it's a process that everybody can learn, and by implication, you can never expect to be anything better than average. So the thing that we always try to do is to make sure that I put this little phrase on the bottom here, we mix in a little magic. Something that separates the, shall we say, the best from the rest. So it's vital that you create an environment that people can invent, be themselves, and use their creative genius to drive product and innovation. So while we want process, we want that. Don't want to separate it from the magic of invention. Well, we're on the other side of the balance beam here is operational excellence. And sometimes there is a conflict. You know, when you have a company that is highly inventive over on this side and highly disciplined over on this side, you know, sometimes rationalizing the two can be an interesting, delicate balance. But we are absolutely committed to operational excellence. We've added lean methods to our portfolio Six Sigma that we're well known for and better planning. And we use these sort of two hammer and anvil, shall we say, to drive growth either through organic expansion, white space filling, geographic, and so on and so forth. And we believe that it's these things together that can float up profitable growth. And if you kind of take a look at these quickly, this area is about customers, this area is about products, and this area is about operational efficiency. So they all come together pretty handily. So, you know, where does any company begin when it wants to grow? Well, my point of view, quite frankly, is that it should grow the core. There's often a temptation to kind of want to go out and do something snazzy or sexy, but the reality is that a company is most likely to have success if it sticks to its core. And so we believe very strongly in building our core. But we also believe that in order to defend ourselves, in particular in the middle market, we need to extend the core in some cases. And in particular, you know, we start where we're strong, and in my observation, God nearly always seems to be on the side of the big armies, so we need to get scale and build relative share in the markets in which we participate. Become important to customers, because, you know, when a customer comes to you, I don't know if you really thought much about this, but if you pick a company, say, for example, General Motors, going back 25 years, General Motors would have had 150,000 suppliers. But General Motors now, the competition is such that they need help from suppliers to bring innovation. So they can no longer manage 150,000 suppliers. It's got to be shrunk down to something more manageable. And they need those suppliers to be able to bring a wide range of products and innovation to help them in their competitive battle. So this is our aim here, is to fill out weights, white space, bring more more capability to our customers. So we call this extend the core. Something where some companies go wrong, and that's what I call invent a new future. Because if you're not prepared to invent a new future for yourself or your company, somebody else is going to do it for you. I mean, that's just the practical reality. So you've got to be prepared to cannibalize what you've got over here with a new future. And it's often the case that you see companies that don't do this well that suffer and attrit and die over time. And then lastly, you know, while you're doing all of these sorts of things, you should always be looking to build the broadest long-term competences that you possibly can. So, for example, in our optical business, while we are extraordinarily competent at optical films, we ought to try to look at other adjacencies that we should play in and build competences in as a bulwark against competition all the time. And then you take that concept and just leverage it, really. So this is the goal of the current business, which was the previous slide. Make some acquisitions that certainly follow the core strategy. Mostly tuck-ins, they might give you access to a market, might give you new technology, might give you a new brand in a secondary market, and in some cases they would support adjacency plays. Look at adjacencies, but don't go too far from the core. And then lastly, international growth. And typically international growth for us has been about 2 to 3x the growth that we've had in the United States. And just to show you how important this is for us, this past year, 2006, we had 63% of our sales were outside the United States. So very important piece of our business for us. Here's how we compete. You know, we're known for innovation, but it's not the only thing, because in the end, yes, this is one thing, but cost, distribution, customer service, marketing and brand management and people are really how we go to market, how we go about competing with, and we hope, defeating the competition. Some near-term things that we've been up to. You know, you've seen what we've been doing in the past year. Let's talk about a couple of different things here. Capital investments in the core. We have 18 plants or major plant extensions which are under construction across the world, and one's in Canada, one in Mexico, about 6 or 7 in the U.S., 4 in China, 1 in India, 1 in Russia, 2 in Poland, and 1 in Korea. So nicely spread. It's not all concentrated in one place, and it's not all being done by one group of people. And this was one of the major impediments that we had to growth. We were out of capacity in many places. So we've had to put that money in here and solve those problems. And also, in this sort of convoluted supply chain that grew up over many, many years, we're using this restructuring to relieve the constrained supply chain. On acquisitions, most of them, if you've looked at what we've been doing, have been relatively small. And there are several reasons why that is. First of all, these are what I call oil the squeaky wheel acquisitions. We've filled out white space. We've got access to some overseas markets. We've bought some key technologies that we perhaps were short of. And generally speaking, these acquisitions have been relatively small. And one reason why they've been small, simply they've been the ones that have been available in the markets that we're in. You know, if you're trying to grow internationally and you're trying to grow in Asia, there aren't $450 million braces companies in Asia. They're $40 million, $25 million companies. So by their very nature, they end up being small. And the other beauty of keeping in this particular space, at least for now, is they're in the kind of the underbrush of acquisitions that are not all that interesting to the private equity guys. So we can get these things and have a steady diet of these small acquisitions. But in due course, we may from time to time look at some bigger ones. Here's just a few. This is you know, where the rubber meets the road. I mean, it's not only words on a slide. These are plants that are being built. There are two here in Poland I mentioned here. This is the statement a couple of months ago, being built in Russia. This is a new plant in Korea that we'll be making respirator masks in. This was a plant that we'll have online from approval to start up in less than about a year. So great things here. Same sort of picture going forward. On M&A, you know, fundamentally, it's about return and it's about strategy. I won't belabor this particular slide. Some of the examples, some of the things that we bought this year, and we acquired about $500 million of sales for a purchase price of about $900 million. Some people do get concerned that we're talking about going from here down to here, but we actually do mid-market and low-market products already. This is examples in our consumer business. Scotch and Post-it are what we use at the top. Highland is what we use down here. And we make private label tapes for a number of different customers. Same over here in the respirator business and even in our road sign business. So here's where we think we're going to grow. Here's where our focus is. In the traditional 3M area, 5-8% growth. And we think we can leverage that pretty well at 40%. So the top end of the middle market, we think we can drive over time an additional 2-4% of growth, slightly lower leverage, and we'll expand this with acquisitions and EBOs. Probably second and third year on, we'll leverage this with 20%. And we have no intention to participate in this commodity dog-eat-dog price-only market. Here's what our near-term local currency growth targets look like. Bottom line, 6 to 10%. We believe that for 2007, our 6-quarter average has been at 8%. And here's the breakdown of individual businesses that we manage. PBOs, formerly, this is high growth space areas, focus on filtration, track and trace, energy and minerals extraction, and food safety. These have been absolutely huge. This one in particular has been huge this year for us. So bringing it all together, look, it's not only about one thing, it's about these four things. It is about organic growth. It's where we started. It is about selected divestitures. You know that we sold our pharmaceuticals business. Tough task, very challenging sale process. And there'll be a few more bits and pieces that we'll take out of the company. Our capital strategy, we started here first and perhaps with acquisitions. This is where we're thinking next about what we have to do. And acquisitions, I think I've said enough on that. Supporting investments and cash back, just kind of bringing up the rear here. This is what our share repurchases have looked like since 2001. And we have purchased $8.9 billion of shares back in the last 5 years, $6.7 billion in dividends paid. Our dividend CAGR is 9%. And a staggering number, probably to most people, is we've returned 103% of reported net income via share repurchases and dividends. It's an absolutely staggering number. So, last slide here, what's it look like? In the organic area, we're targeting 2x IPI. Right now, that would be around 8%, perhaps 7%. And EPS growth longer term in that band, 12-15%. Investment returns always maintaining above 20%. And I think that's probably as much as I need to say. So thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Appreciate it.
Hey, George, in terms of, ramping the investment, sales and marketing, R&D, CapEx, and acquisitions, a lot sort of going on at one time. Have the results been coming according to how you expected them to, and how do you think about it in terms of, the throttle there and when you decide is too much or not enough?
Sure. I think we certainly took on a lot last year, and, we set ourselves some pretty tough targets. I think that's true. But I think a tough target, a stretch target is better than a low target. So at least in this early stage of our development, I think we're more likely to set ourselves some pretty tough expectations. Seems to have done okay last year. In this coming year, our major challenge is going to be getting all these plants finished off and getting those launched and getting them done smoothly. I think then, in due course, I think some of this, mainly perhaps by the first quarter or second quarter of next year, I think the pig will have run down the python, and we'll see a sort of return to more normal levels of investment. So I don't think this is going to go, Shannon, ad infinitum. I think we're going to see this easing next year somewhat. That's the internal plan that we have. Anybody else?
Just tell us how much, roughly, the 15 plants constitute in terms of capacity expansion at 3M.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the question.
Just roughly, how much the 15 plants, constitute in terms of capacity expansion?
Probably in terms of sales value of good produced, that would probably arm us with, what do you think, Bruce, $4 billion of sales, potentially? Incremental headroom. It's a rough number. Maybe it's 3, maybe it's 5, but it's in that ballpark. Some of these plants are quite large.
Can you get into some details on what level of improvement we can expect from the supply chain initiatives and the ability for 3M to deliver on them?
Sure.
One of the you gave GM as an example, and it was a little easy for them because most of their suppliers are within a couple hours and it's delivering to a few plants. You've got a global, obviously, you know, innovation globally in companies like I think Trinidad Tobago are on the map. It's a tougher issue for you to get supply chain logistics out of a situation like that. So,
yeah, we have, of course, this is almost a daily change, but we have right now 131 plants worldwide. We probably about half of our plants, products move across multiple plants. And that's where the real availability, the compression, the possibility of compression in the supply chain is available. I think the reality is that, in fact, typically, by the way, just one other little metric for you, typically a product will take about 100 days to move through our system, move through multiple plants. So we have a relatively slow-moving supply chain, and what we want to try to do is to get those plants close to where the market demand is and get the multiple hops out. So I think, without getting myself too boxed into a corner, I think we have, over the period of the next 5 years, I think we've got the potential for several hundred million dollars of working capital coming out, and certainly 50 or 100 million dollars in cost by this particular initiative. But the other thing that happens in here is being close to the customers, we can respond fast, and I think it helps to facilitate growth on top of all of the other things which I said.
Could you discuss your share repurchase authorization and what you're going to do when it expires, your current one?
Yeah, there's without me getting the cart in front of the horse here, you should expect to see us continue the kind of pattern historically that we have. I don't see us pulling back from that. Our board meeting is on the 12th of February, so that will be something we will consider at that time. So rather than making any promises, we will see what the board says. But I don't see anything, I don't see us pulling back from that, Amy.
I have two different questions. Hi. One, when did you decide to increase capital spending? Did you do that soon after you came, or was it something that happened later? When did you really discover that you were that capacity constrained? That is one question. Secondly,
yep.
When do you expect the CapEx to peak?
When do I expect the CapEx to? Peak. Okay, excuse me. You know, when you come to a new company, you know, and the board gives you a mandate of yours trying to figure out how to drive higher growth rates. We think growth is stalled. We need more growth. And I think they were absolutely right. Of course, you come into the company and you go through a diagnosis phase. You know, what's the root cause of these problems? Is it an R&D problem? Is it a product development problem? Is it a capacity problem? Is it a distribution problem? So you go through that phase. But I think relatively early, it was clear to me that at least one of the serious impediments to our growth was not having sufficient capacity, and we were out of capacity in a number of different product lines. You've asked me a similar question to that before, and I'm going to give you the same answer. And that they're the plain and simple facts. So it was probably within 3 months of getting into the company, I realized that we have got to go out and solve those capacity needs. One of the ways we've gone after growth in the past was to outsource much of what we did. My philosophy, though, is a little bit different than perhaps some of my predecessors. I think if something's right in the core, if it's respirators, if it's braces, if it's tapes, if it's core to your business, it ought to be in your business. And we were talking earlier with some investors that one of the classic examples of how this can go wrong for you is we were actually outsourcing, we were short on sponges. Now, you may not get excited about sponges, but Mo Nazari gets excited about sponges because he can make a lot of money on sponges. But we were buying sponges from our largest competitor in France and bringing them back to the United States and selling them in private label. Now, that's not really a great answer for the issue, but yet it's, because we were out of capacity, it's what we have to do. So we were trying to avoid, I mean, simultaneously two problems, strengthening our competition and satisfying our customers best. So that's essentially what was going on. So it was a relatively early decision. I also saw, when I looked at the R&D numbers, you know, we'd, you know, in all candor, had favored pharmaceuticals and perhaps not necessarily always put as much money in the core in the balance of the business as we might have done. So we've been redressing those sorts of issues to try to get those back in balance. Then in answer to your question about when will the CapEx peak, it'll either peak this year or next. My real hope is that we can get most of these issues behind us by the end of 2007. Some will wash over into 2008. You know, obviously, plant construction doesn't always synchronize terminations at one time. And so what I'm hoping we can do is begin to sort of press down on that next year, you know, maybe a couple of $100 million less next year, and hopefully then bring it down to 10 or 15% above depreciation. Yes?
Speaking to the... 3M is one of the few companies that has never, in my opinion, at least as far as I know, not had analyst meeting in their plans. Every time you try to want to look at a plant, it seems like there always has been some excuse. So I came to the conclusion perhaps the plants, you know, were really not state-of-the-art type of plants for whatever reason. Or you had just far too many and it wasn't convenient. It seems to me like you are building a lot of new plants, that they probably are going to be state-of-the-art type of plants. Are there many other plants that you need to upgrade? And so what really is going on in terms of efficiency?
In terms of?
Plant efficiency.
Well, first of all, I personally have no objections whatsoever to the investment community going and seeing our plants. In fact, some of our plants, I think if you went to see them, you would be awestruck. You really would be awestruck if you went to see a multi-layer optical film manufacturer. We tend to be a bit secretive about some of those things, I must say. I mean, I'll just give you one more sentence on the optical film. You know, laying 1,000 layers of optically pure film together, 1,000 layers, each layer 3/1,000,000 of an inch thick, polarizing in particular directions to produce a particular effect. It's the hardest, the most difficult manufacturing process I've ever seen in my entire manufacturing and engineering life. So I think you would be awestruck. And I think actually it would be very helpful because you would realize just how difficult it is for competition to enter these markets. Because we're often asked in the film business, for example, so are you going to get your brains beat out by X company, Y company, Z company? And the answer is almost certainly not. And it's for this reason, I think it would actually be very, very helpful for you to do that. In terms of capacity utilization, it varies all over the map. You know, some of our businesses today, like our respirator businesses, they're 100% capacity. In fact, we're doing everything we can just to keep those plants running until this new capacity comes on stream. So to my knowledge, there aren't any real sort of landmines anywhere in those issues. We've got a few plants, I think you know, where share's fallen, perhaps because we didn't invest in the future in some cases, where we may be underutilized in some plants. But as a general rule, those are a relatively small number, maybe 5, 6, 7 plants out of the total. So fundamentally, I think the capital has been pretty well utilized over time. And we have certainly talked inside, Bruce is smiling at me here, we've talked inside about wouldn't it be a really good idea to let some of our investors come and see our plants and just see how good we are at this particular manufacturing. So I'm completely open-minded. Some of my colleagues may feel a little bit more secretive than me, but I think it would be very helpful, and I'm up for it.
I was curious about the planning process around the 2007 outlook because the long-term goal is 12 to 15% earnings growth, and this year substantially lower. We've had at least one other multi-industry company today talk about the official number and then some level of contingency plan that could take that number to a higher level. Can you just talk about the variability in your 2007 numbers, if you have a best-case scenario, worst-case scenario, and kind of where the official numbers fall into that, and kind of what could go better that might get us to closer to the 12-15% long-term growth rate?
Well, you know, like all sensible companies, we always put contingencies in our estimates. I mean, it's just sensible planning that because things, there's always something goes wrong, so you need some kind of contingency. The range that we put out, 460 to 475, is you know, we would not set targets that are going to be slam dunk for ourselves. We're clearly not going to do that. But I think the thing that has to go right this year, we have to get the vast majority of these plant constructions executed flawlessly. The early quarters, I think, of the year, the U.S. economy, I think most of us who participate in the economy know it got a little softer in the fourth quarter. It's in our expectation, we said this on our conference call, that we think that growth will be lower in the first quarter, but we expect, and we get a little bit of benefit from an easier comp in the second quarter. But some of our plant constructions start launching in the third quarter. So if the plant launches go well, and as purchase accounting comes off some of our acquisitions, I think we should see some headwinds in the beginning of the year, but probably more tailwinds toward the end of the year. So, I mean, unless we thought we'd go in that range, we wouldn't have put it out. I don't know that I want to be hinting to you that there's a number different out there, but I mean, please be aware, as all companies would, we would have some kind of sensible contingency to cover things that might go wrong during the year. So we're not bare naked.
Can you talk about how 3M ended up getting to the situation of having, you know, running out of sponge capacity? Was it overzealous attack on return on invested capital? Like, and if so, what have you changed internally to ensure that we don't run out of sponge capacity? And it seems ridiculous that ended up happening and costing as much as it has.
I think part of it was we got started a few years ago on Six Sigma. I think the organization came to believe that there was always going to be another few molecules of lemon juice in the lemon. And I think that, so we got ourselves into a position where we always thought Six Sigma would come to our rescue. In fact, we all know that in reality, that's something that runs out of steam. And I think perhaps we kept on that pathway a little too long, and we're maybe not as aware that we're running out of capacity as we maybe might have done. You know, our culture is a very, you know, believe it or not, is a very frugal one. We're very conservative, very circumspect about where we make investments. And generally speaking, I think 3M's modus operandi would always be to really heavily work something before they would make an investment. So I think part of it is a little bit of a cultural issue. What has changed since, in the answer to the second part of the question, I think people realize now that piece of what we were doing was maybe suboptimal, and that we probably missed some growth opportunities, whether it's sponges, whether it's respirators, whether it's films. We missed some opportunities by perhaps not investing a little more ahead of the curve, so to speak. I think that's now, my view is that that's dissipated. I think people are really turned on by the prospect of growth. I mean, you know, when you get growth and you finish the investment phase and you get the growth going, it is really just a powerful motivator for the corporation. So I think already people are enamored by, we're getting better sales growth, we seem to be able to get the penetration that we want. Once we finish this investment phase, I think we're going to see more leverage. And I think that phase of our history is probably behind us. So I think maybe cultural and maybe Six Sigma would be the answer to your question.
Just as a little bit of a follow-up, could you comment, basically the same question, but with respect to R&D, and, you know, what do you think is the required sustainable levels percentage of sales for R&D? I'm not sure if you think about it that way, but if you just talk about R&D, and maybe was that overzealously cut in the past as well?
Well, I think that traditionally we spend on pure R&D about $1.4 billion a year is the number that we spend. I don't see necessarily that number dramatically increasing, although it did increase this year, where we thought it was important to go after some particular technologies we were short on. So, you know, that turns out to be 5% of sales or so, 4 to 5% of sales. I don't think it's going to get outside that band. I think that's the way it'll be. But what will be important for us is to make sure that we prioritize properly and invest our R&D dollars on the biggest opportunities. And there are some big opportunities out there. Okay, I think we're done, Sean. Thanks very much. Very much, everybody. Thank you very much.